At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I am Carlos Galazza, joined by Peter Flaherty on this Thursday, September 22nd. What's going on, Peter?
Not much. Hard at work, like you and everyone else's, mainly on the handbook stuff, but it's still a fun time of year for baseball. The playoff races are heating up, particularly the NL wild card with the powers that be playing a huge factor. Mother Nature has thrown a massive wrench into that, but doing well. Excited to talk about some arms on today's pod.
Yeah, it is the off season for a lot of the amateur world. A lot of college baseball stuff is not really happening unless you're super dialed into the fall ball stuff. And for us at Baseball America, I feel like this year we all kind of tend to pivot into prospect handbook mode. So it's a little bit of a different pace for the draft pod. But I do appreciate there are some people who really love like kind of the off season draft podcast, just because it kind of created the illusion that there wasn't a real off season. And I think for baseball in general, there's not truly an off season if you really don't want there to be one. And we like to keep that mentality at BA. So if we can give you guys some baseball action in a downtime, then great. But I think most people listening to this podcast are probably pretty invested in postseason races, and October is about to heat up. So it's certainly not fully downtime for baseball as a whole. But today on the draft show, we wanted to talk through some pitching. And Peter, because I wanted to be particularly nice to you today, I feel like we can focus maybe exclusively on some of our top college pitchers in the class. We've alluded to some of these arms in previous conversations in recent weeks, but I don't think we have focused exclusively on like an in-depth pitcher podcast. And why not jump into that this week? We've got some exciting guys up top between Tyler Bremner and Jamie Arnold. I'm sure that'll be a fun comparison point throughout the year. And then really, I'm just looking kind of down our list and looking at all of our top 40 college pitchers. The order we have them in right now is Tyler Bremner. We have him ranked third overall, right-handed pitcher out of UC Santa Barbara. Jamie Arnold, left-handed pitcher out of Florida State, number four overall. In the middle of the first round, we have Matt Scott out of Stanford, right-handed pitcher at 16. And then a little bit further down the board, guys who aren't currently inside the first round, but I could easily see them jumping into the first round with strong springs next year. We've got Kyson Witherspoon, Oklahoma right-handed pitcher at number 38, and then Jamie Arnold's rotation mate Cam Leiter at Florida State, another right-hander at number 39. So I guess, Peter, thoughts on these guys as a whole, and I guess who is your favorite right now of these pitchers? I'm pretty partial to Tyler Bremner for reasons we can get into, and I guess unsurprisingly, perhaps, since he's the highest ranked guy, but I know we've talked about how this year's college pitching class is kind of appealing. Do you still view it that way?
Yeah, I do 100%, especially the crop at the top. I think the battle for SP1, not only collegiately, but in general, is going to be really fun when you have Tyler Bremner, Jamie Arnold, Seth Hernandez, Cruz Schoolcraft. That's a pretty legit and powerful quartet up at the top. And then when you isolate solely on the college guys, I think the depth stretches beyond the I guess star power, so to speak, at the top. You mentioned Matt Scott is a really talented arm. There are guys further down the board. Kyson Witherspoon, I've taken a real liking to since this past summer. I got a couple of really, really good looks at him. Think he's someone who could pitch his way into the first round. Cam Leiter can be spoken about in a similar breath, especially if he can put together one a fully healthy season. I think that's going to be the key for him after going down and dealing with some injuries last year. But the stuff that he has is, I think, I mean, it can go toe to toe with basically anyone in the class. And when you throw him and Jamie Arnold in the same rotation, that's going to bode really, really well for Florida State, I think. And then Gabe Davis is another, we'll get into him as the cycle goes on, but it stretches even further down the board with Gabe Davis, Zach Root, Landon Beetlesheese, AJ Russell, Anthony Ianson. Like, there are a lot of fun and really talented arms in this class. So I think, again, it's going to start at the top with Bremner and Arnold, but I think I'm pretty excited and bullish on the group as a whole. And I'm with you that Bremner is right now my top starting pitcher in the class. Mm-hmm. I know yours is Seth Hernandez, but
yeah, if we're just looking at the college guys, I would take Bremner with you though.
Yeah, so Bremner's my SP one. Again, I'm going to wrestle with it a lot between him and Arnold. Like, it's really 1A and 1B. Mm-hmm. But I'm with you that it's Bremner.
All right, well, let's get into that conversation a little bit, maybe comparing and contrasting Tyler Bremner and Jamie Arnold. I feel like for both of them, what stands out is just the combination of power stuff in two pitchers who really throw a lot of strikes. If you just look at the walk rates for these guys compared to the Matt Scott's, Kyson Witherspoon's, Cam Leiters of the world, they stand out much stronger. Tyler Bremner walked 6.1% of batters last spring, and then the year prior, just 6.9%. So pretty consistent for him in college, not walking a ton of batters. Jamie Arnold did walk 13% of batters in 23, but 2024, while moving into a full-time starter role, that went all the way down to 5.8%. And strike rates for these pitchers, you're looking at guys who are throwing the ball for strikes at 67, 68% of the time. All the other three pitchers that I've kind of lumped together in this conversation are much closer towards the 60% range, which would be more of like a fringier below average for just pure strike rates. So for me, that's kind of what separates them into their own tier. And then we can talk through maybe like uniqueness of the profile, righty versus lefty, starter track record, pitch mix, like quality of the pitch mix. I think Bremner and Arnold have some similarities, but the way they get to it is quite a bit different. And I think, like, depending on what you like for your pitchers or how much you value left-handedness or how much you value unique lower slots, like it could really make this conversation pretty interesting.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we can take this in any direction you want. Do you want to start with Bremner, I guess, since he's our
top guy. I'll say for me, the reason I have Bremner as the top guy is just because I feel like most of his pitches, I like them a little bit better in a vacuum compared to Arnold. I like the way he delivers the ball and just the operation he has a little bit better. I feel like it's more conventional, and so it makes me feel a little bit safer because of that. And then also, you've got a decent difference in just average velocity from last spring. I mean, Tyler Bremner was sitting 95, Jamie Arnold was sitting 93.2. They're both getting those pitches up to 97, 98 at peak. How much you want to discount the righty versus lefty, I guess, is an interesting conversation. But for me, like, when I was going through, I had to compare these two for the USA Baseball top prospects list. They were 1 and 2, but I found myself just like giving Tyler Bremner the edge on a lot of different categories. Command, fastball quality, breaking ball quality, and it was narrow margins, but I just, for whatever reason, found myself liking Bremner's stuff just a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think with Bremner, I think that the edge and stuff is what has him as my number one guy as well, and then also the ease in which he does it. Like, the delivery is really low maintenance, it's under control. I think he moves really well on the mound, and that's not to say that Jamie Arnold doesn't, but when you talk about the conventionality of it, which I don't even think is a word, but I guess the optics of it, I am a little bit bigger of a fan of Arnold. And like, you could leave the yard after watching him pitch on any certain day and leave with 360s on your card, at least, with his fastball, slider, and changeup, depending on how the slider looks.
Yeah.
And with Arnold, you could leave with 2 sixes on the fastball and slider, but the changeup is still kind of in under development. And I think developing that third pitch is going to be key for him going forward. But with Bremner, like, the changeup is his moneymaker. For as good as his fastball is, where it's going to sit in the mid-90s with some carry through the zone, explode from a slightly lower release height. Like the changeup is a legit 60. Like it's at least 12 off of his fastball consistently, really just slows down as it reaches the plate, kind of just has that falling off the table action. And I think with him as well, and this is another positive quality with Jamie, is the strike throwing ability really, really stands out. And it kind of takes me back to a quote that I've thought about a lot since he dropped it, but Quinn Matthews on the most recent Hot Sheet show, which was really interesting and insightful, which you can see over on the Baseball America YouTube channel. I highly recommend checking it out. But he said something along the lines of, and I should have pulled up the exact quote, but he said something along the lines of, stuff really only buys you grace.
Yeah, and I love that. That was a great line.
Yeah, I thought that was, it got me thinking, and I'm in agreement with him. Like, Bremner has, and Jamie Arnold, but when focusing solely on Tyler here, Bremner has outstanding stuff, but if he wasn't really able to pitch, it doesn't really do much for him. And when Quinn was saying it buys you grace, like, sure, you know, they'd want to keep you around, an organization want to keep you around a little bit longer than if you didn't. But if you can't throw strikes and you can't locate, you know, your stuff's either going to get hit, because professional baseball players are really, really good and they've seen quote unquote stuff for a while, or you're going to walk the house and they're going to release you. So, I mean, the fact that he's also a pitcher and Jamie's also a pitcher, I think plays really positively to both their profiles.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree. I think there are a lot of pitchers, both in college baseball and in the minor leagues, who have really exciting, just pure arm talents, but are more throwers instead of pitchers. And when you can kind of combine really advanced pitching ability and elite pure stuff, that's when you're getting a special pitcher. And I think both Tyler Bremner and Jamie Arnold have a chance for that. I mean, for me, with Tyler Bremner, if you look at his fastball, I think it's kind of like how you would draw up a plus fastball, a fastball that really gets you excited. Like I mentioned, last spring, he averaged 95 miles per hour with that pitch. He was up to 97.8, 98 miles per hour, essentially. Above average riding life with the pitch. I think he throws it from maybe a slightly below average release height. It's a flat approach angle at negative 4.6 based on the numbers I'm looking at. So it's much more of this like riding four-seamer from maybe a slightly lower slot that I would expect to play up, just because he's going to land it for strikes. He threw it for strikes 65% of the time. He got a 22% miss rate. But then if you look at Jamie Arnold, he is much more of like this two-seam fastball pitcher. He does throw from this lower arm slot, basically entirely sidearm at times. If you look at his release height, it's not just like slightly below average. It's 52.9 inches, which is significantly lower than average. Whereas Bremner's, I think he's throwing his at like 70, 71 inches on average. He also has a flat approach angle with the pitch, but instead of being this like riding fastball, he gets a ton of arm side movement on the pitch. And also, just in terms of overall miss rate, last spring he generated a 31% miss rate with that fastball, which is anytime you're looking at a college fastball and you're getting over a 31% miss rate with that pitch type, it's pretty impressive. And so it's just such a unique look. If you look at just his pitch plot on Synergy Sports, it's a very east-west profile, which makes sense given kind of how that pitch moves out of his hand. But whether it's because of his ability to command it, the pure movement, the angle that it comes from, both of these pitches play up. I guess just given the quality of competition that Arnold is facing versus Bremner and the pure miss rate, you could make a case that his fastball is better. But I think that Bremner is kind of like that classic riding four-seamer that you would maybe create in a lab a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. It'll be even more fun to follow how it progresses and how he can maximize it depending on which player development system he can get into, because I think that there's still a little bit more when it comes to optimizing his fastball. I think he can get more whiffs on it than he does currently, just looking at the traits and looking under the hood a little bit. Like you mentioned, the riding characteristics, the slightly lower release height, like there are a lot of really positive traits here, and that's not even talking about the velo that he's got, which is going to be mid to upper 90s consistently. And then with Jamie Arnold, again, like he's a classic 1-2 punch guy. The fastball, really, him as a pitcher, the strides that he's made since his true freshman year have been pretty remarkable. And I know he was an arm that Florida State was really excited to get to campus in general in 2023. He was this classic, like, skin and bones lefty in high school. Like, there's a video on YouTube, I think it's still up, of him as like a junior or a sophomore throwing a bullpen, and it literally looks like a stiff wind would blow him over, and he's just so raw and out of sync. And it's just the progress he's taken year over year has been remarkable. And he showed flashes as a freshman, but when my first look at him was the summer of 23 on the Cape when he was with Hyannis, and he was really, really good. The velo wasn't there, but he was locating his stuff well. And like you said, the east-west profile really played in his favor, especially against left-handed hitting heavy lineups. The fastball, even back then when it was sitting high 80s, low 90s, it exploded out of this lower slot. It's got run and ride through the zone. And when he was locating it was really tough to square up. And then the slider, it's lengthier and there was some bite to it. And then last year he took it to a whole nother level, 11-3, sub 3 ERA, 159 strikeouts to 26 walks in 105 innings pitched. And I think that the ACC Pitcher of the Year race was a little bit closer than people realize with him and Chase Burns. Like, he was going punch for punch and toe to toe with Chase Burns more often than not on Fridays. But going back to him as a pitcher, it's a really exciting profile. I mean, you're looking at a left-handed starter I'm really confident in both these guys' abilities to start, and you're not taking someone that you're not confident in starting in this potential top 10, top 15, top 20 type of range. But
yeah,
fastball, he added over 5 miles an hour of velo to his average from 2023 to 2024. Up the slider usage,
like, shockingly improved fastball velocity in just 1 year.
Yeah, it was unbelievable to see. And last year he was pitching like 2-5 with it, up to 6-7 consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And it just explodes out of that lower slot. And I mean, it's got run and ride through the zone. It plays really, really well in the top half and to his arm side. And when he can sequence his pitches as well as he does and mix in that long sweeping slider that's got some bite to it, it makes it really difficult on hitters. And he does a nice job, I thought, of varying the slider shape as well. He'll make it more of a back footer and add some depth to it against right-handed hitters. And then against left-handed hitters, it's a true sweeper. And I think that it's also a testament to the pitchability that he's got, knowing how to pitch, knowing how to sequence, attacking the zone, and attacking the zone with your best stuff. Like, he upped the slider usage from 23, which I think is key. So again, those are the fastball and slider. Those are 2+ pitches. I'm just really curious to see how, and then also if and when the changeup can take that next step forward, even if it's just a serviceable third offering, like a straight changeup in the mid 80s, just to give hitters a little bit of a different look. I'm curious to see how that goes.
Yeah, that'll be my biggest question for Arnold moving forward. They're very different pitchers, but I think Hagen Smith had and still has some of the same questions. He's very fastball slider dominant left-hander. Where I just want to have a little bit more confidence in the changeup. I think Hagen threw his changeup around 10% of the time last spring. Jamie Arnold, a year ahead of the draft, he threw his changeup just 5% of the time. He really didn't show the same sort of feel for that pitch as he did his fastball slider. I think one thing that really stands out about both Arnold and Bremner is their feel to throw their sliders for strikes. I mean, both these guys are throwing that pitch 69, 70% of the time for strikes. I am encouraged with the comment you made about Arnold's ability to kind of change the shape of that slider against right-handed pitchers, because if you are primarily fastball slider as a low slot left-hander, I immediately would worry about, like, what are the platoon splits? Right-handed hitters have been better against Jamie Arnold than lefties, though neither side has really had a ton of success against him in general. So third pitch development will be key. I do think he does a four-seam and a two-seam variation. So but between, like, just fastball in general and slider, almost 95% of his pitches have come across those pitch types. Whereas looking at Tyler Bremner, he's throwing his fastball 44% of the time, the changeup nearly 30% of the time, and the slider 26% of the time. So really, as a hitter, you have to kind of be ready for three different pitches. Whereas with Arnold, I think you maybe could get away with just worrying about fastball slider at this point. So upping some sort of third pitch usage or showing a little bit better feel for the changeup creating a little bit more confidence in that pitch moving forward, I think is going to be important for him, particularly as a left-handed pitcher. But I know there are a lot of people who think that a changeup development at the next level is probably the easier pitch type to add than if we had big breaking ball questions, which we definitely don't with either of these two.
Yeah, and with Bremner, I mean, since his true freshman year, like the changeup with him has always been like the money-making secondary. That's, I mean, when people start getting into the nitty-gritty of the class, his changeup will be talked about as the best in class and certainly be in consideration for it. But the slider I've been really encouraged with, and that was something that even last fall, I was curious to see how it looked in their various scrimmages, and it really, really flashed, and it continued to get better and better as it got into the season and then through the season. We're like right now you're looking at a, again, you could leave the yard with a six on your scorecard with Bremner for the slider, but it's a comfortable 55 right now. And I think it's only going to continue to get better. So, and he's got a little bit, not to random, again, second reference to Quinn Matthews, but I think I referenced this earlier, in an earlier episode, at least, about Bremner, is he has this like California cool attitude to him on the mound and this mound presence of like not caring. And I mean that in the best way, because it's very reminiscent of Quinn Matthews and how he still pitches today. Like, he couldn't care less who's in the opposing batter's box, what situation it is, the moment. Like, he's completely unfazed and a low heartbeat guy consistently, which I think is also a very underrated aspect to his profile. And when you're trying to poke holes in it, it's really difficult to right now. I think the upping the fastball whiff a little bit would be kind of what I'm curious to see as we head into this spring. And then if the slider,
I want him to, I think the one for him is just start a full season. I mean, both his first two seasons with Santa Barbara, he hasn't started more than 10 games. It was 8 starts in 23, 9 starts last year. Like, he's split time in the bullpen more than you would expect. Like, one full extended season as a starter, I think, would be like the cherry on top for me for his profile.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And I think that's a great point. And another thing that, again, could be rather appealing about the profile is come draft time, even if he starts for it, barring something, I think, unforeseen, like, he's going to be the headliner for Santa Barbara on Fridays. Like, they run a first class program and are going to be one of the most talented programs out West, as they always are. But he's going to be like, he'll be the headliner on Friday nights. And come draft time, even with that, if he's making 18, 19 starts this year, he's going to be a relatively low mileage arm, which I think is also, again, another slight check, depending on how you view that in the positive box for Bremner.
Another thing I'm just now noticing too is there's something weird going on with Tyler Bremner's stats on his page with UC Santa Barbara's website, on Baseball Reference, on D1 Baseball. Like, none of them are the same, and I'm not quite sure why that is.
For what it's worth, I usually go off BREF.
And BREF is money. I do like how D1 site gives me strikeout rate and walk rate instead of K per nine and walk per nine. But actually, it does look like BREF and D1 are in unison. And then, for whatever reason, the UC Santa Barbara player page has not fully updated for his season, which is odd since it's September.
This is a whole other like wormhole to go down, but some of the school websites on how to navigate them and the stats they show are just so bad. So
beyond brutal.
As we head into 25, the message to all schools is just lock in a little bit, because it would help us out an immeasurable amount.
But, yes, yeah. Absolutely. Well, we talked about Quinn Matthews quite a bit on the show so far. Let's move into the lone Stanford product that we're going to talk about today in Matt Scott. And Peter, we've got a pitcher here who, for his career, he's got an ERA above 5. He's never had an ERA below 5 in a single season. The walk rate is north of 10% in both seasons. He did have a jump in strikeout rate from 20% to nearly 29% in 24. So why are we talking about Matt Scott, a guy who, on the numbers, on the surface, has been just kind of mediocre at the college level as a potential mid-first rounder?
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true from even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/baseball. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up, it's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I mean, this is a classic. You kind of have to disregard. This is a metal bat. I mean, he is getting hit around a little bit more than you'd like, but everything else, if you discount the ERA just for a second, I mean, the stuff is very, very real with him. And, you know, it's this mid-90s fastball that last year averaged almost 23 inches of ride, and it was up to, I think, 24 or so. And he supplements it with this really hard and effective gyro slider in the mid to upper 80s, even in the low 90s. It gets a ton of whiffs against right and left-handed hitters. And then the pitch that I'm most intrigued by, and if you look at the usage, if you have access to the usage, he's been predominantly fastball slider, but this split change that he mixes in, I mean, I don't know what he calls it, but it acts as a splitter. The average spin on it is sub 900, and he only threw it 6% of the time, but it was really, really effective. So I think if I were with him, I'd try and up that usage of the split change, because it is a really, really effective third pitch, even for as little as he threw it. It's almost 12 miles an hour off of his fastball. And it's a real, real change of pace to opposing hitters. He doesn't throw it with as much conviction as he does his slider. He slows his arm down a little bit, but it's a real different look. It kind of falls off the table. It's got a ton of late tumble to it with some fade to the arm side. And I think it's a really, really effective third offering, along with that cut slide that he mixes in as well. So much appealing stuff with Matt Scott, and he's got just this workhorse frame, and he's just this physical specimen. I think he's listed at 6'7", 247, super thick lower half. Kind of an interesting looking delivery from an optic standpoint. It's almost kind of not necessarily a checkpoint delivery, but it is an interesting looking
one. It's not like a super buttery smooth Chase Dolander type delivery, that's for sure. He has like this very abbreviated like leg kick and hand pump with it prior to striding towards, and it's like a snap back with his hand out of his glove in the leg lift. It is a bit unusual, but he certainly has a really powerful workhorse frame. I'm with you on a lot of the stuff that you mentioned. I am intrigued by that splitter. When you talk about the splitter and the four-seam fastball, like the shape difference in those two pitches, if he can maybe add a little bit more deception in his arm speed when he throws the splitter, you're talking about a fastball that averaged 93, 94 miles per hour with more than 22 inches of vertical ride, and then a splitter that checks in 10 to 12 miles per hour slower and has 20 inches less in terms of vertical movement. Like, that has to be a pretty devastating combination of just two pitches if he can throw them both for strikes more. I think for me, that's also one of the keys. You had mentioned just throwing the split change more in general, but I think with Scott and really all the pitchers that I imagine we'll talk about today, coming out and showing a bit more control and command, I think will do a lot for their profiles, just both to allow their all this really impressive pure stuff to play a little bit more frequently, and also just to give more conviction that these pitchers are starters moving forward. I don't think Matt Scott threw any pitch for strikes more than 61% of the time. Really, the split change, the slider and the fastball was all kind of in that 58 to 62% strike rate. Like I'd mentioned previously, he's looking at an 11% career walk rate, which is not great for a starter. I mean, for 2023 or 2024, excuse me, class pitchers, that's pretty solid. But in general, especially for first round arms, you really would like a walk rate that's a little bit better. So I think those would be two areas that I would hope to see some improvement in. And then maybe we'll finally look at a season from an ERA perspective that's a little bit more in line with the talent, the pure stuff, and the prospect status of Matt Scott.
Yeah, I think that's the key. Even upping the strike percentage by like 4 to 6+%, I think that's going to pay serious dividends with him. And I think he's got it in the tank. If he's able to do that, I think he's finally going to have the season that I kind of thought he was going to have last year. I was bullish on him after his true freshman year and thought the jump was there. And it was in some aspects. I mean, 103 Ks in 80 innings. He was invited back to Team USA. But he has this super, super impressive stuff. And if he can just command it a little bit better and be a little bit better of a pure pitcher, I mean, he's a monster. So there's a lot to like with him. It's a fun kind of ball of clay as is. And I think that there's another jump in there that he's got in the tank. And then I'm also curious, in a similar breath to his split change that he's got, really just splitter, he also seldom threw this cut slider hybrid that was in the high 80s to low 90s. I also think that that's a really effective pitch. So if he can up the usage of those two offerings, I think that that's gonna, you know, also enhance the profile a little bit. But there's a lot to like as is, and could be even more in the next handful of months.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move out of the first round into a few other pitchers who, like I said, I think have a chance to jump into the first round of the strong seasons. The first one, let's just get into him, because he's been a guy that you've mentioned kind of in passing on a few podcasts. You're really excited about him. That's Oklahoma right-hander Kyson Witherspoon. Of all the pitchers we're going to talk about today, probably the most in terms of present top end velocity. He's been up to 99 miles per hour. It'd be really unsurprising for him to consistently throw triple digits in the near future. He might have even already touched 100 at some point in the past. But Kyson Witherspoon, Peter, I think he fits into this same sort of electric stuff profile with maybe some concerns about pitchability and starter reliever questions. But tell me why you're so excited about Kyson Witherspoon.
Yeah, so I got a really, really good look at him this summer that we'll get to eventually. But kind of his career path, it's been an interesting one. He started with his brother Malachi at JUCO powerhouse Northwest Florida State, where he was really good. Transferred into Oklahoma this year. He could have signed if he wanted to in 23. Didn't quite get the dollar amount he wanted to, or whatever it was. Ends up at Oklahoma, where he starts in the bullpen and then makes the jump into the rotation, where he was really, really good for the Sooners. 3.7 ERA, 90 Ks to 40 walks, which is a little bit high for, I think, everyone's liking in 80 innings. But then he goes to the Cape and Team USA, and on the Cape, he was stellar, and it was a really small sample size when looking at the entirety of his profile, just 9 innings across 2 starts, but 10 Ks to, most encouragingly, 0 walks, and he allowed just 1 earned run. And when I saw him, it was against a Kituat lineup that was at its peak, I think. They had all their USA guys still. They ended up leading the league in hitting, but he was outstanding. He was locating all 3 of his pitches for strikes. It was a really easy and, I think, controlled violence type of delivery. I think from an effort perspective, it was pretty low, but he's got just big time arm speed. And the fastball, through 5 innings, he was holding 95 to 97 and into the 6th. He was up to 98, and he supplemented it with this really effective breaking ball that he can spin the crap out of. And then also, similar to, I think, like a Matt Scott, especially when you're looking at the third pitch of someone's profile, I think that he's also got a rather effective changeup in the tank as well. And I think that if he can just up the strike throwing a little bit, it would quell any concerns that I had about his starting ability. But what I saw this summer, granted it was just one look, but what I saw this summer was someone that has the chance to pitch in the front half of a rotation professionally. And I think that there's more to develop and enhance with the present stuff that he's got, which I think is already pretty darn good. So he's a really fun arm.
It's been fun tracking Kyson over the years and his brother Malachi. Like you mentioned, they were both ranked in the BA 500 coming out of high school in the 2022 class. Kyson at the time was 17 on draft day. We had him ranked in the 400 to 500 range out of high school. At that time, he was throwing 88, 93 miles per hour. A year later, he goes to Northwest Florida State and is one of the most impressive arms on that team. The fastball is now 92, 94, up to 96. And now we're talking about a right-hander who has some of the most electric arm speed, I think, that we'll see in the class. There are probably some guys with some really quick arms, but his stands out. Like you'd mentioned, he averaged 95.4 miles per hour with his fastball last spring. Like I mentioned, he's been up to 98.8, 99 miles per hour. And he actually throws that pitch for strikes at a decent amount, 64% strike rate. I would like to see a little bit more from his secondaries, whether that's more usage out of the changeup or just more feel for the slider, which he threw for strikes about 60% of the time. But yeah, I think for me, the delivery, I do wonder about if it is just more suited to being a reliever. There's some moving parts in there that I have some questions about. The walk rate a year ago was 11.2%. Would like to see that improved a little bit. He mostly pitched in the starter role and pitched effectively there. But he relieved a few games as well. And I think that's going to be a big question mark for him moving forward. But in terms of like pure stuff and upside potential, I think his is as talented an arm as we have in this class. And just looking at kind of the pitch profile and the movement profile that he has going on, it's pretty exciting. I'm not sure if you view the slider, and I guess sometimes it gets classified as a cutter. I'm not sure if it's a distinct like separate pitch or just like the slider at its upper levels of the velocity band just gets classified as a cutter. It does look like there's a maybe a noticeable difference in shape. So he's another guy that kind of like Matt Scott has that harder breaking ball variant that's kind of intriguing. It's weird. I'm not getting his full data on the changeup, but what do you like about that pitch? I know he did get a pretty good miss rate on the changeup last spring, nearly a 50% miss rate while using that pitch 7% of the time.
Yeah, it's firm. So, I mean, it's not going to be, even though he's pitching with his fastball in the mid to upper 90s sometimes, it's not going to be too much off of it. But whether it's, he's still kind of, it's clear that just from watching him pitch, he's still gaining feel for everything. Like, the raw stuff is there, but it is inconsistent at times. Like, even with his slider this summer, like, there'd be more that would take on this gyro look. And then other times he'd rip off this lethal looking sweeper with some sharpness to it. And you'd be like, whoa. So I think that there's so, like, talking about balls of clay to mold, you've still got this kid who's relatively raw, but long winded ramble short. I mean, with this changeup, it's inconsistent. Like, it's a different look off his fastball. Sometimes it'll end up more straight, but it does also at times, especially against left-handed hitters, which he'll mix it in against right-handed hitters as well, which is interesting. But against lefties especially, it'll have a ton of fade to the arm side. And I don't want to discount what he's doing and saying it's by accident, but if he can gain a little bit better of a feel for it and throw it a little bit more, I think that that's going to be his go-to third pitch. But I'm with you where there's like, I'm a little bit scared of the reliever aspect to it, maybe more so than some other arms, but I think that there's also high end upside here. So some organization is going to not necessarily roll the dice, but I think pop him pretty early. And if he ends up with a Tampa Bay, Milwaukee, LA, Seattle, Houston, like, you could be looking at a potential monster here in relatively short order, really with anyone, but especially when you're talking about those organizations where the track record with pitching and pitching development is so outstanding. And again, just looking at Witherspoon again with his changeup here, like, there are some that he'll rip off that are clearly above average where it'll just have this late tumble to it and a ton of fade to the arm side, and then others that are more of just a kind of a less firm fastball. But I really like him a lot, and with the, and similar to you, if he can kind of clean up some of the low hanging fruit in his delivery, that should only play in his favor. I think that if the rawness can be minimized going forward, it's only going to play in his favor.
Yeah, there's something about his arm action that is a little just off-putting to me. That I'm not in love with, but there are plenty of guys in the majors who get it done in different and unique ways. So that's certainly not some sort of something that just eliminates him by any means. The stuff is really impressive. All right, let's move on to Cam Leiter, who is the second FSU pitcher that we're going to talk about today. And I think just based on how some of the scouts I've talked about or talked to about Cam Leiter, I feel like he is a super exciting arm next spring for a lot of them, just given some of the pure stuff and dominance that he flashed at his best with Florida State. I mean, he started his career at Central Florida, pitched well in a starter's role for that program, then transferred to FSU, where in the first few weeks of the season last spring, I think he was on a couple of our college hot sheets. He was really dominant. Overall, he only threw 7 starts, 35 innings, 4.63 ERA, a 35.2% strikeout rate, and a 13.8% walk rate. So of the pitchers we talked about today, I think maybe the variance of his profile is greater than anyone else, just given his lack of time on the mound in recent memory, at least. I don't know in terms of like high school or freshman year, how that would stack up for him. But scouts are really excited about his stuff. And at his best, he's been extremely electric and definitely sounds like a guy who could move into the first round with a full, healthy, and solid spring. What are your thoughts on Cam Leiter, Peter?
I think in keeping it brief about his stock, if he can up the strike throwing a little bit and stay on the mound and stay healthy for a full spring, this is a slam dunk first rounder and probably a top 20-ish type of pick when all is said and done. Like, if you're looking for someone, at least on the BA board, who is maybe a little bit further down in the late 30s, range, early 40s, to creep up into that SP1 conversation, I think that lighter is a prime candidate for it. This stuff is, like you said, it's undeniable, and I think it can go toe-to-toe with anyone in the class. He'll pitch with his fastball in the mid to upper 90s. It explodes out of his hand. It's got a ton of ride and run through the zone, and he supplements it with just this banger curveball that's, for me at least, it's easily a plus pitch. And it's got huge depth with a ton of sharp downward movement.
Maybe the one true curveball of the five that we're talking about here at this point. Most of the other breaking balls are sliders, but it does look like a legitimate curveball with lighter, which is always fun. I feel like those are a little less prominent these days.
Yeah, I was going to say, against right-handed hitters, it almost takes on a true 12-6 shape, less so against left-handed hitters, but it's been a really hard pitch for opposing hitters to square up, and I think that he's got a pretty decent feel for it as well. And then the usage of it was low, especially last spring, but the mid-80s changeup that he has, it gets solid separation off the heater. It's got some late fade to it. I think that it has potential above average upside to it, and then he rounds out his arsenal with this high 80s power slider. He didn't throw it a lot last spring, but I think last fall, even before the 2024 season, it was a pitch that I thought had taken some pretty positive strides. So there's a ton of like with him, and then rounding it all out, he's got this great body. I think he moves really well on the mound, knows how to use his size, the delivery. I'm particularly a fan of as well. So if he can just stay on the mound and up the strikes a little bit, he's already a monster. I think that you could be looking at one of the first arms off the board, which is where we have him right now, but he's someone who in the future could be the potential headliner of a rotation, I think, if all goes well.
Yeah. And I don't think we've mentioned it at this point, but, obviously given the name, he is related to Rangers right-hander Jack Leiter. He is a cousin of Jack Leiter. So part of a pretty impressive family of pro pitchers, beyond just Jack and Cam. And I think the point you made about him being like a great target as a guy who could leap up boards with a strong season is a good one, because as you look at him, between the delivery, the body, the stuff, the feel for spin, I guess the feel for strikes is maybe the one big question, at this point. So he's got all the elements and all the traits and all everything you want to see from an impact pitcher. And I think that Florida State rotation in general will be one of the most fascinating to watch next spring. And then Cam Leiter in particular, just because there are a little bit more unknowns with him compared to a guy like Jamie Arnold, who's a bit more proven given what he did last spring and this summer with Team USA. So that's Cam Leiter. I don't know if I have a ton more to add. Do you expect his curveball to maybe morph into a slider at the pro level, or do you think he can keep the sort of curveball shape he has now as a legitimate pitch moving forward? It's funny to me how often those curveball guys become slider guys in the pro ranks.
Yeah, it's a good question. From this chair, at least, I mean, I think he can keep it. It's like you said, it's one of the few true curveballs. I think especially nowadays in the pitch itself, like a true curveball is becoming increasingly rare. Like that's, and just looking at it, you know, how he throws it and the shape of it, all the traits, like that's not something I'm going to want to necessarily mess with. Like it's almost a legit 12-6er. It's got a ton of depth with a ton of bite. It's a pitch that I think he's got a pretty, there's a degree of comfortability throwing it, and it gets tons of whiffs. So, I mean, if you've got as building blocks with lighter, you've got a plus heater easily, in this plus curveball, I think that those are two great pitches to work around. And if you can up the strike throwing and you hone in on either this, for me, it'd be the changeup, but also the slider that he threw sparingly, you hone in on one of those and, try and max that one out. I think you're looking at he certainly has number one or number two starter upside.
Yeah, pretty loud for Cam Leiter. All right, that's kind of all I had. I don't have too much to add. I guess the curveball, just give me more info on the shape of that pitch. He throws it like 2,600, 2,700 RPM spin rate. It's got negative 16 inches of vertical break and then negative 10 inches of horizontal. So pretty good movement in both directions there in general. So that is Cam Leiter, and those are our five pitchers we're going to talk about today on the college side. I'm sure there are plenty more we'll get into moving forward. But in terms of top of the class arms, those are the college guys to be aware of as of right now.
Yeah, as you could probably or hopefully hear from us talking through them, it's a really exciting group. And even the college pitchers in general, the arms that I'm excited about stretches beyond even who we talked about today. I think that the Arkansas duo of Root and Beetlesheese is a really dynamic one, and Gabe Davis at Oklahoma State, if you're talking about from a starting perspective, kind of a raw righty but with huge stuff and this crazy frame. Like there are a lot of fun profiles and fun arms in the class, so I'm excited to dive in deeper. And then even if you look like a little bit further down the board, like Joseph Jirwa from Michigan State, 6'7" lefty from a low slot, super projectable.
I really wanted to get him on the top 100 on our recent update, but he just barely missed the list. So he was one of the guys that I really wanted to squeeze on that is in part of this group of like 15 players that I wanted on.
That's how it always goes, I feel like. But he's a
last year's draft class, not so much, but this year definitely some guys I want to try and stuff on.
Yeah, so there are a lot of fun guys, no matter where you look on the board.
All right, Peter, you got anything to plug before we get out of here? I'll say I'm just working on a few pieces on debut hitters, debut pitchers from the 24 class who stood out in their pro debuts. Like Peter mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, also working on some prospect handbook stuff at this time. So a lot of calls, a lot of reporting being done on the pro side. But what do you have coming up that you want to plug or anything else you want to mention before we get out of here?
Yeah, handbook without a doubt. If you haven't bought it yet, I would highly recommend it. Whether you're a draft nick or more of a prospect head, there's the report writing in there is second to none and super in depth, and you've got all 30 teams with the most thorough reporting. So whether it's a to me from me type of gift or for someone in your family for Christmas or even for yourself, highly recommend. But the next week and a half will be predominantly recruiting stuff on the website, which has been really fun to dive into. So if you're listening to this on Friday or whenever you're listening to it, next Wednesday will be the top 25 recruiting classes, followed by that Friday, 10 classes that just missed the top 10. And then the following Wednesday, a handful of underrated, under the radar classes. So tons of stuff on the recruiting front, and then even looking beyond that, just tons of draft college and yep, all the coverage that you could want. So it's a fun time of year. As you said early on in the podcast, I like to think that there isn't really an off season. Lots of fun stuff both this month and beyond.
Cool. Well, that about does it for us today. Thank you guys for listening to the show. Thank you for supporting Baseball America. If you do, we definitely appreciate you guys allowing us to do the work that we do. So thank you so much. For Peter, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.